Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Friday edition of the Killer Bees, and nothing could be better to set up your weekend than no Jeremy Branham, no Brian McDonald, and a full steady dose of DJ Bieniemy. He is an honorary Killer Bee. He joins us throughout the football season. He's going to join us all show today. DJ, great to have you on. We are out here at Sam Houston Race Park. Your first experience out here at Sam Houston Race Park.
Yeah, no, it is. You know, I'm not really into horse racing. But, you know, I did it one time with my friend Teague and Josie back in college at the University of Louisville. You know, we've been on a couple horses. Obviously didn't win. But, you know, this kind of reminds me of that environment just a little bit.
It's you know, when I played ball in college and we would travel, horse races and the dog track were a lot of my teammates' favorite thing to do. And it's like the Greyhound track, to me, I didn't have to put all that research into it. I just figured if the dog took a dump before the race started, I think that dog's got a chance. I might bet on that that dog. Horses, like Fred Fowler, R.I.P. Fred, and obviously Fred with the fame of the Blitz, the show in the slot that we now hold, Fred was a genius at horse racing. And he would come out here and just give guys tips and wins, and you can make some cash. I mean, these people are dedicated.
Yeah, no, I mean, some people are here all day. But I just wonder, like, what exactly are you betting on? Not you know, I get it. You bet on a horse. Like, I get that
right
part. But, like, what is your strategy? You know, is it how big the horse is? Is it, you know, how long the horse is? Is it, like, how young the, you know? You know,
I mean, we've heard about horses. I don't know. I'm just saying. But,
you know, like, what is it that makes you pick which horse to go
with? Like, these guys, and some of them literally have, like, tons of notes and, like, Bible-sized books and everything like that. I think it's kind of like, you and I were talking about this before the show, I think it's kind of like analytics where they're going over their last 10 races, they're going with trends, they're going with, you know, you get, because there's the different distances for these horses. Well, what are they doing? It's like the 40 time versus the 100. You know, they're calculating all of that. And as I told you, like, a lot of these guys, if they put that much effort into the real world, they might have some pretty high-paying jobs right now instead of hanging out all day. I'm just saying.
I didn't know you was going to say that on air, but I'm glad you did, because that's hilarious. Because it's true, though. I mean, the amount of energy and focus, you know, like for me, like, I play a lot of Madden. I spend a lot of hours on Madden for whatever reason. If I cut that in half, you know, maybe I might own ESPN.
I'm saying, like, you and I were talking about this right now because the live racing is tonight. And by the way, live racing starting at 6:30 tonight. General admission's only $5, $4 big beers, $2 wine. You can come in. You can have some fun. On Saturday, you can watch and wager on the Belmont Stakes. Going to be right here on all the TVs. So it's like, you know, your favorite sports betting and sports bookie place with a sports bar atmosphere, tons of TVs. You watch it here. You're right here at the track. You catch the racing here as well. It's a great place to be, especially on the big race days. So you can go to shrp.com for more details. But during the day, people are in here all day watching the races at different tracks. We were talking about it. Some dudes are, like, slapping their rear end like they're riding the horse, screaming at the TVs, throwing their tickets. It's like the passion that goes into this is on another level. I mean, I know I've been to sports books in Vegas before, but it's not on another level sometimes around here.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I mean, my friend Chris Rim, our ESPN Charger reporter, we're in, like this Madden league. So, like, if you're making a comeback on somebody, he'll send in a video of a guy – of smacking his butt with a newspaper at a horse racing thing. So I can only imagine what that is like to actually be here in the environment where horses are actually going.
It's a really cool place, though. And, you know, a lot of people have seen it when they've driven by it, when they're going to the airport or around the Beltway. But if you actually stop in, I mean, it's a really neat environment.
Yeah,
they've got races all the time and promotions going on. Last time we were here, they took, $10,000 worth of jewelry and buried it in the infield dirt.
Really?
And if you found it, you kept it. And they had this section where people had to go and kind of sift through and go get them.
Did anybody find it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, the next time I do it, let me know.
So, no doubt, right?
So I can show up.
We could be like, what, the San Francisco 49er people with the sifting for gold kind of things?
Yep, that's what we're going
to do. I was going to ask you, when you said you played Madden, we were talking about this the other day, that if you were in a room with 100 random people from around the world, if you had one skill that you were better than all 99 other people, you get $1 million.
I get $1 million?
What would you choose? Because we discussed, definitely not for me, but we discussed video games. Brian McDonald had suggested that he might consider video games. And we were thinking, well, like, if it's cross-sectioned around the world, like, I kind of narrowed it in. Like, I'm from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So if I go with Wisconsin trivia, how many people are going to compete with me on that versus anything athletic or, you know, skill-driven things like that? Jeremy said tic-tac-toe because that's the kind of thing Jeremy would say.
Right.
But, like, would you – because a lot of people play Madden.
Yeah. I mean, for that, for $1 million on the line, I don't know if I'm going to go with Madden. I mean, I'm pretty good at Madden, but I probably go with arguing. I could argue a wall.
Yeah, but how do you – I mean, because the thing there is, like, how do you declare a winner? Like, the, what, the other –
whoever wins.
The other 98 whoever, people are judges?
Yeah, whoever wins the debate. One thing I can do, I can argue till my tongue fall out.
My wife will tell you I can too. I can tell you that. I can tell you that. You just got to pick your spots. But
if it's not that, then I probably that's a good one. Oh man,
because I said look,
really good one.
Milwaukee bowling. Mm-hmm. So I threw that on the list. 80s one hit wonders and 80 and any kind of music trivia. I'm pretty good at.
Okay.
Because I used to DJ. So back in the day, you know, you had all the different genres and all the different. But I was just trying to find like that random thing that you could make sure that most people just didn't have. It's tough, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, I'll have to say for me, Madden, I mean, if I'm going to go against 100 random people, yeah, no, for sure. But, yeah, no, that's really tough to think about what one skill you have.
Because if you just do straight trivia, you know that there's somebody that's going to be like someone that had competed on Jeopardy or something that'll blow your ass out of the water.
Right, yeah, I can't. I'm terrible at that type of stuff.
Yeah, I loved it because my mom was always watching game shows, and we'll talk about that a little bit later too. But I loved the serious like Jeopardy type questions.
Right.
But sometimes you just get random people that might dial into a certain genre of a topic, and all of a sudden that you're like, oh, there goes my mill. I'm
right,
out.
Right. Yeah, nah. Ooh, wee. I can't say running because what if I get in there with Usain Bolt?
Right, exactly. Or you catch some dude from, you know, that suddenly, oh, my God, I didn't realize I was going to get some guys in junior nationals right now, and I haven't run in a while. That doesn't do me any good.
Yeah, I might have to just ride it out with Madden, and hope for the best.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're going to do here. It's a Friday, so we're going to ride it out and hope for the best. No Jeremy, no BMAC. Me and DJ are going to take you for the entire show. We got some great special guests coming up. As always, Todd Callis, the voice of the Astros, is going to join us at 4 o'clock. He's going to talk about that road trip starting tonight in Anaheim with Framber Valdez on the mound. So we'll get some questions to TK. If you guys have questions throughout the day for me, for DJ, for Todd Callis, and oh, by the way, our special guest, if you're not aware of this, today is the anniversary of Game 1 of the 95 Finals against the Orlando Magic when the Rockets came from the depths of the dead. A Kenny Smith three-pointer and an Akeem Olajuwon tip-in got them the improbable Game 1 that led them to the sweep of the Magic and their back-to-back second NBA championship. So, apropos that we bring on the kiss of death, Mario Elie, he's going to join us for a segment or two. We're going to talk NBA Finals last night, Rockets draft coming up and off-season. And if you guys have questions for Mario, please send them our way, 713-780-3776. You can text the show. We're always looking at the text messages. You can call in, and our good friend Austin Rodriguez back at the station will make sure that he lets me know you're on the line. We'll get those questions in on to Mario. Mario, he does prefer Mario over Mario. He's one of the rare few. And then, of course, you can hit us up on Twitter. You can hit us on the Twitch and the YouTube as we are there as well. And if you want to reach DJ, it's at DJ Bienname. He is the Texans beat reporter for ESPN. But more importantly today, he is my co-host for the next almost 3 hours. So we're going to have some fun along the way. We're kind of just going to seat of our pants, lead into the weekend, have some fun. No, we're not going to be as sportsy as Jeremy today. We're going to span the globe. We're going to have some fun. We're going to kick it. We've got some other things that we've got planned for you that you can chime in on, and those are the kind of topics that listeners like to chime in on. I think that if we did, because I always make fun of the easiest radio in the history of radio is when you do a Mount Rushmore. Like, who's the Mount Rushmore of Houston sports? Everybody has fun with that. But when you get into things like best fries at a fast food place or favorite salty snack at a truck stop.
Salt and vinegar.
Like, people go crazy with their passion. And even Jeremy. Jeremy's like, Sun Chips is the worst chip ever created by man. He crushes Sun Chips.
What?
They, oh, yeah. That, I mean, again, but it's
Sun Chips.
He hates them. Like, my kids. My kids love the new, was it nacho cheese Sun Chips?
I hate nacho anything.
Oh, my oldest daughter loves them.
I hate Cheetos if it's not Flaming Hot. I hate Cheetos.
I like regular Cheetos, nachos. The crispy ones.
I hate regular Cheetos. I hate nachos. I hate anything that's, like, super cheesy. I hate Cheez-Its. If it's super cheesy, you can pass it by me.
Do you like regular cheese?
It depends.
Is that a trivia question?
It depends.
I mean, come on. It depends. So, you eat pizza?
Yeah, I like pizza. I don't eat pizza often. I think last time I ate pizza was, like, maybe, like, it's been a while. Oh, February.
Like, I don't know how long you've been here enough to know that there was a radio legend by the name of Charlie Pulillo that's been in the market. And Charlie is very different in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. He does not like cheese except for cheese steaks and maybe pizza.
Cheese sticks?
Steaks.
Steaks?
Yeah, cheese, you know, like Philly cheese steaks.
Oh, I mean, that's all right. That's all right. Yeah, no, I wouldn't eat cheese.
I'm from Wisconsin,
DJ.
The cheese is like, cheese is thicker than blood when you come from Wisconsin. I'm just throwing that out there.
What part of Wisconsin?
Milwaukee.
Okay.
Yeah, only big city worth anything in Wisconsin.
You're right about that. Did you ever go to Green Bay?
Oh, yeah, up for Packer games.
Okay. Did you ever go to, like, I think it's called a brewery where they had, like, duck legs?
There's tons of breweries to go to.
Yeah, no, there's one. I went there for a joint practice, and they had these duck legs. They had this very, very good sauce. It was absolutely amazing. Yeah, I forgot the name of it.
Duck legs are fatty, aren't they? They're really nasty, greasy.
Well, at that time, I needed it.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're going to be rolling along. Mary Ellie is going to join us next, so we just wanted to make sure we kind of did a little icebreaker, got you guys in. Yes, Keith, the Junkyard Dog, is going to be here. He is the man. We are going to have some fun talking some basketball with Mary Ellie after game one of the finals last night, where the Celtics pounced on and trounced all over the Dallas Mavericks. A lot of you Houston fans love that as well. So we'll step away for our first break. Austin Rodriguez doing a heck of a job. He's back at the studio. I'm a jack of all trades. I'm actually engineering here as well today. Thank you, Joe George. So we're going to have some fun up until 6 p.m. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Hey, back on the Killer Bees. Just a segment into the three-hour extravaganza. It is DJ Bienname sitting in with me today, an honorary Killer Bee, as Jeremy has the day off. But it is my pleasure now to bring in one of my good friends, like a family member in my Rockets family, on this anniversary day of the Houston Rockets and their second championship in a row. My good friend Mario Ellie joining us now. Rio, welcome to the show. Not sure if you're aware of it or not, but I'm sure with your stints on Twitter, you know that today is the anniversary of game one of the first game of the finals against Orlando, where Kenny made a hell of a shot, Dream had a tip-in, and lo and behold, we were on our way to our second chip.
Yeah, it was sort of the momentum of that series. You know, they were beating us by a lot of points. I really loved the poise we had. We didn't panic, called the timeout, regrouped, made a nice low run the end of that second quarter, sort of cut into that lead, and Kenny sort of took over that third quarter, got us in the game, back in the game, and Dream sort of finished it off. And we felt after that game, we sort of look in their eye. They're down there celebrating when they were up big, but after we beat them, we saw a look of doubt, and we went on and took care of the rest of the series.
Rio, we talk about it, but Nick Anderson had a big part in that too. I remember all of them celebrating, and then suddenly they thought they had they went from big stones to tiny pebbles when the rubber hit the road, and they needed some free throws. And my goodness, I mean, that literally changed the entire series. Because I remember going into game two, you guys, we were all in that traveling group. Everybody was really close and together, but everybody was kind of freestyling going into shoot around. And Rudy called everybody around center court and said, he basically opened up a can and said, if y'all don't focus, they're going to beat you by 20 because they think they should have beat you in game one. And you guys just absolutely took them to the woodshed.
Yeah, we were confident after the game one. That's why I felt we went into the shoot around relaxed. We knew it was at stake, but we felt we broke their confidence. And we went into that game two. And Sam really stepped off the bench. I think that 34 points. And, you know, he constant in Green and Clyde. And once we beat them two down there, we're not coming back, especially having, you know, three home games in a row. Back then it was 2-3-2. So I'm glad they changed it back to the normal way. 2-2-1-1-1, that's the way it should be.
Yeah, you know what, Mary, and I think about that, you and I have talked about a lot of this stuff, but for the listener's standpoint, basketball's changed so much. That was a physical brand of basketball. You guys could get away with hand checking. You guys could knock a guy down if he was scoring down the lane. Do you think that this team, with that kind of inverted offense, that inside out and everything, that Rudy was the innovator of, do you think this team, that team in this era would have had a lot more success than even what you had back then?
I just think we could have played in this era for sure, you know, especially with our center being so agile and being able to do so many things. And then Green didn't need a 3-point shot. Green was so good. You can shoot the mid-range. I mean, go to him on the box. He go score a good free throw shooter. He didn't just impact the game on the offensive end. He impacted the game on the defensive end. I think he's a big that can switch on to guards and guard him, not consistently, but he can guard him. He can switch on to a guard. You know, that's what they're doing in today's game, a big switch. And, you know, it's a big thing in the game right now that you have to be able to guard guys off the dribble. But, and then we had guys who can shoot the three. The things that we had were guys who were two-way players. We like to defend as well. And that's what I'm seeing from the Celtics team. They got like four guys out there that I feel who play both ends of the floor, who can defend, so can switch and guard. They make it difficult. They're tall, they're long and physical, and we were sort of the same way.
Mario, this is DJ Bienname with ESPN. Quick question. So, you know, we could just kind of touched on the fact that you feel like you guys could have played in today's era, but, you know, a lot of people from the outside looking in always feel that guys that played back in the old day couldn't play in today's era. Why do you think that is, that people don't have the respect of the guys from the old days compared to now?
They really don't watch the games. You know, they don't do their research. Now, you know, back in our day, you know, I go back and watch my old games. Sometimes I love watching and play back in the day. But it's sometimes hard to find the games. You know, nowadays, you know, you can get any game. You know, you can get all the games and watch all the games. But you telling me, like, a Sean Kemp, I mean, Gary Payton, Karl Malone, Stockton, these guys, of course, Michael Bird, all these guys could have played in this era easily, as skilled as they were. You know, I mean, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, to me, are the most, I know they say Kyrie the most skilled, but I think those two guys are the most skilled guys, basketball players I ever seen in my lifetime. And it's just the rule changes, and it tells you how good these guys were back in my era in the 90s, that they can score through contact. It was guys that didn't really bother guys. They understood it was going to be a physical game, and guys adjusted and played, and the refs back then allowed the players to decide the game.
Real, you know, the other I saw Big Shot Rob the other day on a podcast with Dan Patrick or a show, and he was talking about, you know, the whole discussion of Michael, LeBron, and he said, look, well, first and foremost, Kobe's got to be in that discussion because, you know, to me, not no disrespect to LeBron, and everybody thinks if you pick someone other than LeBron that you're actually disrespecting
right.
LeBron. I think it goes to what you were just talking about in the fact that the closest guy that I ever saw. And I looked. I worked in the NBA. My first game as a ball boy was Michael's first game in Chicago with the Bulls against the Bucks in Milwaukee, and you could tell he was different and he was special. No matter how talented LeBron is, no matter what records he has, the closest thing to him in terms of that kind of killer mentality was Kobe. I remember you were coaching for Sacramento, and I texted you after a game. Y'all were playing them. There was like less than 10 seconds left. They were up by like 6 or 9 points. He hit three of the most incredible. Hang in the air, square his shoulder, three-pointers to beat y'all. And I just shook my head, and I was texting you, and you were like, yeah, man. He was different. Don't you feel like he belongs somewhere in that conversation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question about it. And like you said, the mentality and going on winning two championships without Shaq, I mean – with the physical play, you know, Kobe wasn't the biggest. It's like him and Jordan weren't the biggest, strongest. But, man, their skill set, being able to create space, being able to get to their spots, pump fake, footwork, on the box, mid-range, three-pointer, getting to the free throw line, these dudes were just extraordinary. I mean, LeBron is big and strong. He runs down the lane. I mean, he's athletic. He can finish. He's 6'5". You know, with the rule changes, you can't really forearm him or slow him down. He's able to, you know, he's 260, 6'5", 260. If you can't just put a hand or forearm him, he's going to get to the basket. He's going to get that any way he has to go. It's not no disrespect, but if you look at the other two guys, the skill set, the footwork, the mid-range game, you know, the finish at the rim package, I mean, phenomenal. I mean, also, I mean, Jordan and Kobe, I mean, got a chance to play against both of them dudes. I mean, killers. And that's the difference. You know, that's the difference in those two and LeBron.
You mentioned that contact. And obviously, you know, back in the day when you guys played, you had hand check. How much do you think that actually makes a factor, change the totality of the game and how you guys play, how the game is played now versus when you could hand check and versus when you couldn't? How much has that elevated how much you need skill compared to back in the day or compared to now?
Well, now I'm enjoying that they're letting these guys play a little bit. Dudes are whining and complaining. I'm enjoying that the refs are swallowing the whistle. They're allowing these guys to play a little bit. And then now guys got to adjust. They're not used to it. You know, guys are complaining, hands up. Don't want to run back on D. I mean, you got to adjust to how the game is being officiated. And especially now, our game is sort of European type of game, spread offense, pick and roll, tactical mismatch, big, shoot threes, everybody shoot threes. So we were inside out type of game. We had big centers back when we played. We had excellent big men back when we played. Dre, David Robinson, Ewing, Alonzo, Dikembe, you go to Barkley, you go to Malone, you go to Kemp, and you go to Payton and Stockton and Kevin Johnson. I mean, the list goes on and on. So it's just, you know, now the bigs are sort of coming back a little bit. You know, it's good to see Jokic, it's good to see Embiid. You know, those guys don't really dominate the game.
Yeah, Rio, that's exactly where I was going. I see Dream pretty regularly now, and he's working out his sons, and he still looks like he could play. But the thing to me is always he didn't get enough credit for being a guy that no matter the era, he was just so gifted, not just athletically, because it's one thing to say, oh, he's fast, he's quick, he could, but his skill level was on a different planet in terms of, it wasn't just the Dream Shake, it was his footwork and his ability to recover. And I think that the Joker's the one guy that gets a raw deal. Everybody looks at him and says, well, he's not rocked up. He's not physically what a great, one of the greats in the game should look like. But when you see him play, that should be the decide-all, be-all. That shows you this dude is, he's special.
No question. The Joker's a baller, man. I mean, he makes it look so easy. You don't speed him up. I mean, him and Luka, the good players, either one of them are super athletic. You know what I'm saying? But the skill set, the intelligence, how they read the game, how the understanding of the game is what I like about both of those young men. I mean, Jokic, I mean, he's a point guard. So Popeye Jones, good friend of mine, he's an assistant coach with the Nuggets. I mean, with him, you don't need a point guard. That's why him and sort of Jamal Murray work so well, because he plays off the ball and Joker is the decision maker. And he plays below the rim. You know, they need to play above the rim and shoot the three. He poses up. I like when, you know, switch smaller guys on him. He doesn't mess around with him. He takes a bite to the box. He's an excellent rebounder. I mean, he's just so still. I just felt they lost a lot of their bench this year. Denver, you know, with Jeff Green and with Brown, losing Brown, they just didn't have enough. But he's definitely one of the best players.
Well, Rio, we got to take a break. If you can hang with us for the other side of the break, I want to get into this because it always, personally, and for a lot of reasons, you know, it chaps my rear end that you aren't a head coach in this league. And now we've got this situation with the Lakers and, you know, J.J. Redick going right from the broadcast booth and playing to suddenly being considered. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that and the finals and some stuff if you can hang a little bit. Just let me get through a commercial break.
Sounds good.
Okay, Mariotti's going to join us for one more segment. Hang with us. Much more coming up right here on the Killer Bees on a Friday on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Yeah, you heard the man out at Sam Houston Race Park. Jeremy is off today. My good friend DJ Bienname is in with me, and Mario Elie joining us for another segment on the anniversary of the win in Game 1 against the Orlando Magic in 1995. And Rio, you know, I've been your biggest proponent throughout the years of saying you should be a head coach in the NBA, and it was timing more than anything when you didn't get it. And I know these kind of things have to be frustrating for you, but J.J. Redick, the latest guy to fall in the wings of Derek Fisher and Jason Kidd and guys like that, where you put in, you paid your dues. You put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears as an assistant to climb the ranks, to get to the possibility of being a head coach, and then were basically hindered by the fact that your team went deep into the playoffs when other teams were hiring coaches, and then the cycle changed, and they kind of moved on, and it sucks. But your thoughts on the Lakers now, looking at a guy like Hurley, and also being rumored to have been seriously considering a guy like J.J. Redick?
I just think the Laker job is a tough job. This is the new business of the NBA. I thought both prior coaches did a very good job in Vogel and Darwin Ham with the Lakers. And I just think that's a tough job. I think Dan Hurley's a pretty good name, in my opinion. Because they're talking about they want this guy to be a long-term guy. That's what they need. It's been a lot of instability with the Lakers organization as far as coaching. So they need to get this one right. LeBron don't have a lot of time left. Anthony Davis is at the peak of his career. And I think they need to get younger. So I think the key thing now, a lot of coaching staffs are getting a lot of player development guys. Our league is young. And then a lot of these guys need to be developed. You know, a lot of players need to be developed. So whoever gets that job, I wish them luck. They get the immediate hot seat because it's championship or bust. And like you mentioned, Joe, it happens for some guys like Jason Kidd, Steve Kerr. These guys didn't have experience.
Steve Nash.
He was in the finals. Steve Kerr won 4 championships.
Mario, so in regards to J.J., let's say hypothetically J.J. gets the job, right? You played in the league. You coached in the league. What is the biggest hurdle for a first-time NBA coach that doesn't have that much coaching experience? Well, obviously, J.J. has no coaching experience. So what do you think would be the biggest challenge for him going from having not, you know, coached to now being – in charge of an entire organization?
You have to have your best players buy into what you're selling. So it's building a relationship with Anthony Davis. I feel Anthony Davis, he's the guy moving forward. I feel LeBron, that doesn't have a lot left. I mean, even though he's solid and he has that aura. And he has to build a relationship with Anthony Davis out there. And I think the offense should run through him. The dude is super talented. Made all NBA team offensively and defensively. So he had a hell of a year. I think that's to build that relationship with the superstars. And once if the superstar allows himself to get coaching trickles down to the rest of the squad.
Mario, now doing some scouting for the Pelicans. I also wish he was still broadcasting the Rockets games, but I'm glad you're back in the game again because I think you belong in the game. Rio, I'm curious your thoughts on the Rockets now. We're getting dangerously close to where you have to make a decision on guys like Şengün and Jalen Green. And me personally, I look at Jalen Green and I think the jury is still out. And I don't know how long that they're going to be deliberating, but you see flashes. But you know that one wrong move by an organization these days could be a death sentence if you decide to max him out and then he doesn't end up to be a max player. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on like the Rockets and how important this offseason is, especially as it pertains to Jalen Green and maybe Alpi Şengün?
I mean, I think a lot of teams in the West have a huge offseason, especially as tough as the West is. I mean, the Rockets got the third pick in the draft, so And you're right, Joe. They got some tough decisions they have to make. I know they can't keep all those guys. They're going to at least lose at least two guys from that core. So it's going to be interesting who they keep, who they believe in. You know, Shangoon was having a great year to the injury. Then when he went down, Jalen Green just exploded, got player of the month in March. He was amazing. He was showing flashes what he can be on a consistent basis. So it's going to be interesting. They got a great coach. I really like what Ime has brought to the table. He's brought some defensive toughness. The Rockets have been in a lot of games. They've been injured a lot this year. A lot of their key players have been injured. Easton missed most of the year, so it's going to be interesting when he comes back, how he fits in the fold. Then you got the emergence of I call him Killer Cam. And Killer Cam Whitmore, he comes in. Firing, so they got a good young core, but yeah, they got some tough decisions to make. Who they want to keep and how they want to play. You know, with Shangoon, you play a half court game, but when Jalen, you know, when Shangoon was out, the Rockets were playing a lot faster. It looked like a more fun brand of basketball.
So you don't think it's possible to keep that young core together, or would you do what there's a rumor that they're thinking about doing, trading a couple of those young pieces to try and acquire more of a true superstar player?
Yeah, if you're a coach, you want to win now. You're in the business now. His coach don't have a long life expectancy. And Ime's one of the better coaches in this league. You know, I'm sure he would want some veterans around. He's trying to win now. He's trying to get to the playoffs now. The Rockets got a ton of young guys. I mean, how many young guys do you want on the squad? You want a guy, you go to move a couple of these young guys, you want a proven guy that's going to come help your squad. I thought Van Fleet was a big pickup for them. Thought they needed a point guard. He brought stability to the lineup. He doesn't turn the ball over. He makes great decisions with the ball. He gets the ball to the right place. I thought he really, him and Shangoon in the pick and roll, when Shangoon was rolling, was very effective. And he brought a nice veteran presence, won a championship, and I thought that was a huge pickup for them.
Jabari Smith, the other day, when he went to the NBA Finals, he asked Jason Tatum, what is it like to be a guy that's underwhelming throughout the first few years of his career? How do you get through that? How would you assess how Jabari Smith has played through his first two seasons in the NBA?
I got to keep remembering how young he is. He's still a very young man. He's 21 yet. I don't know if he's legal yet. He's still a very young man. This is a tough game. I mean, NBA game is not an easy game to really conquer. You know, they expect a lot of these young guys, these high draft picks or super young guys, to have immediate impact. And you got grown men in this NBA who have pride, who don't want no young guy really showing them out. So these young guys got to learn the game. They got to get stronger. They got to understand where the offense comes. I feel Jabari at times is a little inconsistent. You know, he can have 24 and 16 one game, then the next game have 6-3. So he has to work on his consistency. I think he's got to be a little stronger. He did a nice job when Shangoon went down and played the 5 spot. I thought he was very effective there, getting transition threes and really spacing the floor for Jalen, you know, and Van Fleet.
Rio, before I let you go, finals. I said Celtics in six. I'm curious what you think. I just thought that defensively, the Celtics able to put Holiday and White on Luka and Kyrie and kind of free up Tatum and Brown so that they don't get it. Because Luka gets exhausted sometimes when he has to play D. I'm curious if you think game one was significant in being what the series is going to look like, or you feel like Dallas is going to jump right back in.
I think Dallas is still in the series, but I'm with you, Joe. I like the Celtics. I just like their depth. And like you said, they took away the lob. I'm really impressed with what Boston did this first game. They really took Lively and Gap without together. They didn't allow those guys to get easy buckets. I didn't understand what Minnesota was doing, just giving up lob after lob after lob. When you got Gilbert and Towns out there, I thought the Celtics did a great job of taking that away and limited their corner threes. They only had one corner three the whole game. So Celtics was on point. And like you said, their versatility on defense. And also, you could put Brown and Tatum on Kyrie and Luka. So they got a bunch of guys they can put on those two guys. And Porzingis is going to be an X factor.
Yeah.
They got six guys. You know, Harper could have a big game. White could have a big game. And Holiday to have a big one. They just got so much flexibility on both sides of the ball.
Am I wrong thinking that it's like in a chess match, it's Dallas's move? Because it seems like all Boston did was just use the pick and roll or get in switches to where they created mismatches. Porzingis got off because he had a foot and a half of space over every defender that he had. And it seems like Dallas has to figure out how to avoid getting caught in those mismatches.
You know what I hate, Joe? Nobody fights over screens no more. It's just a soft switch. I don't know why. I remember in our day, Rudy T always wanted us to stay matched up, so I would fight over the screen to stay with my matchup. I didn't want Dream or Otis or one of our bigs having to deal with these good guards, you know, that we had back then, like a Stockton or a Payton, you know, guys like that or Strickland, so... I don't understand these guys. That's the new defense now. Do anybody want to switch? I'm with you. I don't know why these guys switch all the time. If these guys are attacking the mismatch, I just wish Boston would go to the hole a little bit more. They just love shooting jump shots.
Right.
And good as they are, I wish they would just attack the paint because Dallas, you know, can't really handle. These guys got weapons.
Well, man, I sure appreciate you doing this for me today, and always great catching up with you. You know, I love you, and it's a great day to catch up with you because we agreed to do this before I realized it was the anniversary of the first game of the second championship series. So enjoy the weekend, and always appreciate you catching up with us.
Great catching up with you, family. Keep up the good work, my brother. Great chatting with you guys, man.
There you go, Mario Elie and the Kiss of Death, one of your Rockets' all-time greatest. We're going to take a break, come back with a whole lot more. We got Todd Callis still coming up in the 4 o'clock hour when we talk some Astros. We'll be back with more on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Hey, before we go to the break, though, I do want to tell you, look, the weekend is upon us. It's going to be really hot outside, guys. If you had a tea time and you're debating, do I really want to go out there and sweat for 5 hours, you don't have to. You can go to X Golf and Katy, and you can have yourself a good old time. Play golf in about a third of the time in about an hour, hour and a half. You can get 18 holes of golf in on 50 different courses worldwide on the best golf simulators I've ever been around and ever tried. It is fantastic, and it's X Golf Katy. X Golf has the best simulators in the country. The only X Golf simulators around this area are in Katy. You can go online and check out X Golf Katy and book yourself a simulator. And go in, and for basically the price of a round of golf, you and three buddies can play a round of golf in about an hour and a half. And it's also a great sports bar. So you can watch the sports that are on that day. You can get yourself some good food and beverage. And have yourself a great time and save some time when you talk about how long it normally takes to play golf. And the elements, they aren't a factor. It's air conditioned. The simulators are great. You can play your own golf ball if you want by putting them in the simulator. You can use it like a driving range, too. And with Shot Tracker, it tracks every shot, the distance, spin direction, and everything else. Even the putting and chipping is fantastic. You got to check it out. If you're a golfer, you go there once, you'll be there all the time. You can hit the golf range at night, when the weather's bad. Whenever you want, you can go to X Golf and you can get some golf in. And, of course, that sports bar element just makes it that much better. Tell them I sent you by. Go in today and check out X Golf Katy. Hey, Jeremy's out. DJ Bien-Aimé is in with me. And we have a full show slated for you. That means we just got done with Mario Elie. The King of the Kiss of Death and the Rockets 2 championships. Today, the anniversary of Game 1 win against the Magic in the 95 series. Todd Callis is going to join us at 4 o'clock. We're going to talk some Astros with TK on the road, getting ready to start a big road trip for the Orange and Blue. And we still got some odds and ends we can wrap up here, DJ, with the finals last night. I personally wasn't surprised at the way that game played out.
Right.
Luka's interesting because he's definitely not right. The knee still isn't. And I don't know that it will be the rest of this series. But he still was able to get his. Kyrie was interesting to me because he didn't shoot the ball well.
Right.
He didn't have a good night. But then when they interviewed him in game, he kind of was nonchalant about, well, it's, you know, game one. We expected their crowd. This is what we expected. It's like at that point they were down 20-some. They made it a game in the third quarter, and no one could make a bucket.
Yeah, no, I think when it comes to the Mavericks, I'm not going to get too concerned yet, mainly because – round one against the Clippers. They got blowed. They got blowed out in the first game, but then you know they made it a little bit close. Then you know the Clippers took it away against OKC. Same ordeal. And then even against the Timberwolves, they were down by double digits, and then they came back and ended up stealing that game, and then they stole game two. Also, it seems like with game one with the Mavericks, with Luka, with Jason Kidd, they kind of want to feel it out, see what exactly was going to work, what's not going to work, because they got the best player in the series. Every series that they walked into, for the most part, they've had the best player. And again, like Kyrie sometimes plays like he's the best player in the series also. So from what I've seen is game one is more like the feel, kind of what LeBron used to do back in the day, where like he would always lose game ones, and then they'll figure out what they need to do to win, and then they'll come back again. Like the Celtics hit a lot of threes in that first half.
Yeah.
A lot of threes, and then they got cold for a little second, and you know they was able to pull it back together. But if I'm a Mavericks fan, I'm not feeling discouraged at all, because you hit us with your best punch, especially in that first half, and you still finished with under 110 points. So our defense clearly, or you know, Mavericks defense, they clearly were playing well enough to keep the game close. The offense just kind of dried up. You can't anticipate that Kyrie's going to have another game where he scores under 15 points, hits no three-pointers. P.J. Washington, who was, again, playing very well throughout the playoffs, is going to, again, not make that many threes. So, again, like I think – and, again, like Luka only having one assist the first time in his playoff career, I can't envision – like if I'm a Celtics fan, okay, yeah, great. We won that game. But I know a lot of that isn't necessarily sustainable, or isn't like something you can really hang your hat on, that you can count on game after game after game, you know, especially with Tatum not scoring.
You know, interesting, too, because of the fact that it's like a chess match meets a heavyweight bout, right? The first game is always like the feeling out, kind of, you know, you're throwing some punches, you're trying to see, read the opponent.
Right.
And then from a chess match standpoint, look, I think that Boston made the first move. They got their X factor, like Mario said. Porzingis was unbelievable, but it was because they saw something on film that said, look, if we run any kind of screen action, a guard is going to end up on Porzingis, and no matter whether he's played at all in the last 2 weeks or not, if you tell me that he's got to shoot the ball over a 6-foot guard with his wingspan, he's a good enough shooter that he's going to make shots, and he was huge for them. Now, from a Dallas perspective, how do we combat that? You know, do we fight through screens? Do we have to worry about shutting him down as opposed to being so aware of the arsenal of offensive shooters that the Celtics have?
Yeah, the thing that's sometimes kind of scary with the Celtics, even as a Heat fan, I hate to have to give the Celtics any props, but Porzingis came off the bench and got them 20, right? Like, you have Derek White that can get you 20. You have Jason Tatum who can explode. You also have Jrue Holiday who can have a big night. You know, you can have Al Horford drain a bunch of threes. You can have, obviously, Jaylen Brown.
They're deep. There's no doubt about that.
They are super deep. So, like, wow, yes, I say if I'm a Mavericks fan, I'm going to be kind of confident because our defense was still respectable, especially in that second half. However, man, they are super deep. That's one of the deepest champion teams that I've seen make the finals in a long time. Like, the Nuggets were deep last year, but I feel like they just had like a super duper all timer along with a lot of good other players. This team has a plethora of guys that can end up in the Hall.
That's what I was talking to Jeremy about. When you talk about NBA basketball over the last 10 years, it got to the point where it's not your super dynamic duos. It's when LeBron went to Miami, and then it was three with Ray Allen, almost four, right? But you have to have three. When you look at it from Boston's perspective, I said you legitimately can go 4, 5, 6, because on any given night, like you said, yes, Derek White and Holiday are the first two in line, but there's so many other guys that are capable of giving you 20 and beating you. From a Dallas perspective, you know you have Kyrie and Luka, but then you have to get something out of P.J. Washington. You have to. It's like you can't go down the same list with the same kind of possibilities as Boston has. Is Lively going to be a 20-point scorer? No, he's basically just a run-to-the-rack, alley-oop, and put-back kind of guy. You don't really have, and they don't play Hardaway the way they used to play him, to where it's tough to say, well, who's their third legit if it's not P.J. Washington?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But I think if Kyrie doesn't have the stinker that he had, we only had, I believe, 12 points.
Yeah.
As long as if he doesn't play like that and Luka is able to score while facilitating, what makes Luka so dynamic and so dominant is the fact that he can get you 30, get you 35, but he can also get you 8 assists. He can also get you 7 rebounds. He can control the pace of the game. The pace got way out of whack in this last game. And for whatever reason, the Mavericks this playoffs, they've had random games where they forget to even show up. Like, there was one game against the Clippers. It wasn't game one, but it might have been game four where they were, like, down by, like, 30 points in a blink of an eye. They made it a game. They took the lead. Harden and Paul George made some crazy shots. But they, for some reason, some games, they kind of sleepwalked the start. But I'm fully confident that the Mavericks will be able to bounce back and make it a way, way more competitive game in game two.
Okay, you say that, and then I'll combat that to you and say, okay, well, what I saw was Kyrie wasn't great, and Luka was everything, to your point. So what I'm going to do is I'm deep defensively. I'm going to take two guys, and I am just going to take it out of Luka's hand, and I'm going to say I'm Darren Kyrie and company, because now even if I have one of those other good on-ball defenders on Kyrie, I'm not too worried about the other three guys beating me.
Well, if you're going to double-team Luka or, you know, always blitz him with two guys, you're going to have wide-open guys that's going to be able to shoot wide-open threes. And eventually, guys are going to start to drain them. You know, we've seen it throughout the playoffs. How many times did we see P.J. Washington hitting big shots in every single playoff series? Like, he's going to eventually get going. So, I don't know if that's a great idea. You know what I'm saying?
But who's – okay, so say you double Luka, you put whoever, White or Holiday or Brown or Tatum, someone's going to end up over on Kyrie, okay? Then you have one of your bigs, make sure they stay with PJ. Is Green going to beat me? Is the rookie that looked like he was a fish out of water banked in a straight-on shot last night?
Right.
I don't know who else on Dallas I'm worried about beating me.
I think if you double, that probably makes their life easier. Because now you're going to have, what, 4-on-3? Yeah, that's going to make
it. Should be, but with chaotic defense moving.
With Kyrie coming, you know, being able to operate with more space. Because, you know, if you're going to double Luka, it's going to be at the top of the key or beyond the three. It's not going to – you're not going to get him – you're not going to double him at the post. He doesn't usually get the ball in the post. You're probably going to get him out by the three-point line or a little bit deeper in the three-point line. Now you have Kyrie along with basically 3-on, you know, 4-on-3 with a lot of space. I mean, these guys are going to hit their shots and things of that nature. So if it was as simple as doubling Luka, they wouldn't be in the finals right now.
I'm interested because I think they're going to see it more. It was effective last night from time to time. They picked him up, like you said, in the backcourt.
Yeah.
He turned it over a couple times, and Jaylen Brown got dunks, and it's like they got easy baskets. It's like, well, you know that is the head of the snake.
Yep.
Kyrie has to step up, but like to your point, he can't just be a scorer. He's got to facilitate to find that open guy and open the floor. Otherwise, you're basically strangling the Mavericks and everything that they like to do.
Yeah, no. I mean, but again, like, it kind of worked last game. The chances of it working the entire series, and Jason Kidd, who's shown to be a great offensive mind or great basketball mind, along with Luka, who's obviously a great basketball mind, they're going to figure it out.
Yeah, it should be. Look, like I said, it's a chess match. And
and
the minute that that Boston tries to do that, then Dallas will try to do something else. I just hope, because I hate both teams.
You do?
I really do. You have to hate the Mavericks because the Rockets.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, Rockets. Why do you hate the Celtics then?
Well, because growing up, I learned to hate the Celtics. I grew up in Milwaukee, and I was a ball boy for the Bucks when the Bucks were playing the Celtics every year in the playoffs.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
And every year, basically, except for one, we swept the Celtics. But otherwise, it was Bird, McHale, and, you know, Cancun.
Ain't nothing wrong with hating. There's nothing wrong with hating any Boston-based team. Patriots, Bruins, Red Sox, it doesn't matter. Celtics, whatever minor league team they got down there, you can hate that team too. If they're in Boston, you hate. You know, I got my sister. She's from Boston.
Oh, really?
And her brothers and sisters are also from that area, too. So we're always shooting each other crap for when it comes to anything Miami fan-related to Boston fan-related. So, you know, So I hate anything. Me and my best friend Johnny back home, like, we despise anything Boston-related.
It's hard to root for either one of these teams, but with the whole Dallas and proximity to Houston and all that hatred in the state, too, it's easier to root against the Mavericks in this series for me, though. I think that the Celtics have underachieved since the Tatum and Brown era. And
have they, though? They've got
them. They won one.
Yeah, but, like, Tatum got there in, what, 17? His first season was 17-18, right?
Something like that, yeah.
They've been to a bunch of conference finals. This is their second finals appearance. If they win that, I mean, will it be really underachieving if by year – what would that be, like year seven?
Of yeah, Jason 7 years career? In, and you know, and they're loaded this year. Like, if they don't win it this year.
Yeah, no, for sure. But, like, a lot of teams, unless you're the Miami Heat, the Lakers back in 2020.
Lakers fluke championship.
I mean, yeah, a little fluke. Warriors,
bubble.
A lot of teams don't get to the finals. A lot. And obviously, a bunch of teams don't get to the conference finals. I mean, the Clippers only got one in their whole entire existence.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough of final talk. Todd Kalsik is going to join us next. Talk about that Astros game tonight against the Anaheim Angels, or whatever the hell they're called, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Series over the weekend with the Angels interdivision as they get ready to take on the Angels, then the Giants before they come back home. TK joins us next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Killer Bees with hour number two right around the corner right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the long-lasting power you need with Energizer. Menards has the largest in-stock selection of Energizer batteries. They provide solid power for flashlights, remotes, and so much more. Right now, save big on Energizer batteries. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.